So good afternoon, everyone. I have a special guest on for the 2018 Inca Summer podcast. I have Melina Labucan-Massimo from Lubicon Cree Nation. She's a climate and energy campaigner with Greenpeace Canada and the first Indigenous research fellow with the David Suzuki Foundation, where her research will look at how Indigenous communities can contribute to climate solutions. Melina, I'm honored to have you here in Treaty 4 territory as a Cree sister doing a lot of good work out there. Can you tell me more about your research, the David Suzuki?
Sure. Tensegwakia, thank you for having me, Kimberly, on your show. It's an honor to meet you too, another Nihiao sister. So I come from the Lubicon Cree and from northern Alberta, and you know, we saw immense impacts to the land, water, air, to the people, to the four-legged ones, to all living beings, really. So for me, seeing those types of impacts and kind of the destruction of our homelands and the pipeline spills and all of the different things that I've witnessed throughout the, 15-plus years of doing this type of work, I really wanted to start implementing solutions and building. You know, there's been a lot of tearing down of our communities, but how do we build our communities back up? And I think a part of this, through protecting Mother Earth and protecting the climate and really protecting the future of future generations, is a responsibility for us. So that looks like, for me, in my way of doing it, is ensuring that we rebuild our nations in a way that is sustainable. Because, you know, really, if you think about it, there is so much unsustainability or unsustainable practices that have been really forced upon our communities, and our communities have now somehow incorporated with, you know, the unhealthy foods, the dependency on fuels, the dependency on modern transportation, all of these things that do sometimes increase our quality of life, sometimes do not. I mean, we have high incidences of diabetes. How do we bring back community farming, greenhouses? How do we utilize renewable energy technology that's much more in line with Indigenous ways and Indigenous values of reciprocity, as opposed to resource extraction, which has been a lot of raping and pillaging of Mother Earth?
Great. That's awesome. I mean, you've been so inspiring in so many ways with all the work that you've done in the communities. And I know that you had worked with my home community, because I grew up in Muscatine, Alberta, and nobody knows oil industry better than us, because we've seen the after effects of suicide and drugs, and it's just so heartbreaking for me going back to my community and having to see the after effects of what the oil industry has done to our community, to our people. And I was so happy to hear that you worked with Louis Bull on the solar project, and
I supported him more than worked. I wouldn't take the credit for them, but yeah.
And I. So how did that all start? How did they get the money for it? How did they reach out to you, or how did it all happen?
I mean, I can definitely not take the credit for Desmond Bull's, you know, his really ingenuity, but when in the beginning, when Desmond was looking at solar, we did come in and meet with him as a counselor, and his leadership, the leadership of the community, gave presentations about renewables. So we helped support, you know, more than so Greenpeace did help support, and then, you know, my colleague Mike Kadim is also an ally who's, you know, gone into Louis Bull as well to help support. So I can only really say that I'm really proud of the work that Muscatine has done, and happy to be a part of the kind of precipice and the beginning part of the stages of really where they've gone. It's pretty amazing to see other Indigenous nations, you know, more than just ours. We have a small solar project, but seeing so many more communities in Alberta now kind of, I wouldn't say jumping on the bandwagon, but really like taking it up and really looking at how do we protect Mother Earth and generate energy that does not, contribute to climate change, does not produce greenhouse gas emissions, and all of the things that we know are really affecting our ability to live off the land.
And I know that you always say we need to start teaching the younger generation, and that's for me, because my mom's a teacher and my dad's an elder, and I think we always, it starts in the home, but I think it definitely needs to be brought to the school to talk about climate change, to talk about mother, to talk about it. And I was lucky enough to be raised by, you know, very traditional parents who taught me the importance of the land and took me sage picking when I was little in the fall. And it's sad because I can't do that with my own granddaughter in my own home, in my own area, because it's because of the oil industry. It just, we can't even drink water from the tap.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. And our, like, if you try to have a bath, it's the color brown in my parents' house. You know, it's just sad. And, yeah. But I think it's, I really like that you emphasize that, you know, we need to start teaching our young ones. Also, in your presentation, you talk about what's happening across Turtle Island is cultural and environmental genocide. Traditional territory being poisoned and destroyed. I'm really glad that I really enjoy all your listening to all your presentations, and it's very important that you're getting, you know, you're out there talking globally, and also that Indigenous peoples face violence for protecting our lands. I know this because I spent a month with the Kayapo in South America, and they're facing, you know, the Brazilian government and the Bilo, like the dams that they're trying to build, and they're fighting to keep their lands, 8,000 of them. And if this dam gets built, they'll be devastated. They'll be wiped. They're uncontacted tribe, and they lived like how we lived 100 years ago, and they just want to maintain that livelihood. But they're protecting the rainforest as well, and the rainforest is important. What we do in one part of the world affects the other part of the world, and people don't understand that. And so it is Indigenous people protecting our lands, and it shouldn't have to be just Indigenous people. Totally. It should be everybody. Yeah. But then we have people like Trump who don't believe in climate change.
Yeah. Or thinking that he just said yesterday conquest was a good thing at the Americas. Yeah. It's just horrible.
Yeah, so do you have any other last few words for the listeners out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is exactly, you know, right? Like, it's just Indigenous peoples all over the world are really protecting our homelands, and it's hard for people to really wrap their head around that. You know, and there's 370 million Indigenous peoples in 90 countries and protecting 80% of the biodiversity in the world. You know, we are spread out, and we take care of Mother Earth, and it's no coincidence, you know, that it was pristine here on Turtle Island before contact, because we had a reciprocal, like, loving relationship with Mother Earth. And, you know, we talk, my dad and my auntie talk about how my Muslim, even when they would walk through the bush and pull at trees and pull at leaves, my Muslim would be like, hey, what are you doing? Like, what did that tree ever do to you? Like, you're harming mm-hmm. our relation. So just this, the difference of worldview and cosmovision is very different in Indigenous peoples all around the world. I've actually met Indigenous peoples in Brazil as well. I lived there for a bit, long time ago, 2003. And Indigenous peoples all over the Americas, I've been fortunate enough to meet in Guatemala and some parts of Mexico. And yeah, in Ecuador as well. I went to the Amazon there in solidarity with Indigenous sisters and families that are fighting to protect their homelands. And, you know, we are in, you know, very remote places, surrounded by immense biodiversity, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's a beautiful way to live. And a lot of people don't realize how precious that is and how much what we do to the earth we do to ourselves, you know. And the more that we destroy Mother Earth, the more that we actually essentially are destroying ourselves. And it's just, it's pretty mind-boggling that people don't see that connection. It's sad. It's sad for their kids and their grandchildren and our grandchildren, because they're not going to have the same future of being able to pick sage. They're not going to have the same future of me being able to go on the horse and wagon with my kukum and musum. You know, those are very precious memories, and why I do the you know, fight to protect the land, because I know how vital and essential it is for our communities and sustaining our culture, our livelihoods, our ability to pray on the land, our ability to live with the land is so sacred. And so I think yeah, I'm really happy to talk to you, and thank you for covering these issues, and thank you for making those connections too between our Indigenous brothers and sisters in the South, because they need a lot of support. They have, at this point in time, more violence inflicted upon them, kind of like we did probably 150 years ago or less, you know. Mm-hmm. It's no joke what's happening down there. They're being killed for speaking out like we do up here, so we have to stand with them. Hi, thank you.
Well, thank you again. This is Congress 2018, and this is my very first podcast that I've ever done, and it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to getting more people on and doing more shows. Hi, and thank you for listening, and thanks for Melina for taking the time out to spend with me, and I'm so honored to have her in my presence, so thank you again.